I guess whenever you're ready, we can start and see what happens.
Okay. This is the See What Happens show.
This is the See What Happens show, yes. Episode 107, Let's See What Happens.
Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.
Hello and welcome to Slamfire Radio, episode 107, May 15th. This is the See What Happens show, apparently. I'm Owen, and he's Matthew, and Trevor's not here.
And so very little planning was done, and so it's let's just see what happens. So
yes,
welcome to the show. I hope it's interesting.
I hope no. I just hope it's not totally boring.
Well, it's never going to be boring. I mean, let's be yeah.
I don't know. I didn't listen all the way through last week.
Well, yeah, if you're not a Beretta 92 fan, that may have been a boring show. However, I don't know. It was all right. We had Tommy on. Tommy's always exciting to talk to. So that was good.
I will not go so far as to say that Tommy excites me.
Tommy gets me going. It's basically what I just... Wait, did I say that right? He excites me. He makes me really... want to do things? I don't know.
You have a story about something. Why don't you move on to what you did with guns this week?
All right.
Before we have to change the radio on this.
Right, yeah. So what I did with guns this week, specifically with guns, not a whole lot. Little 22 shooting and stuff. Nothing too serious. But while I was out with my guns, Curtis and I went four-wheeling. And we were driving my parents' four-wheelers on my parents' property. And we were initially just kind of scouting around, just kind of checking over the property and stuff, looking for, maybe some trees that have died recently. My parents sort of manage their woodlot that way and cut down the deadfall for their winter fuel. So we were just kind of scouting around, doing some scouting for trees and just kind of goofing off on the four-wheelers. And because we didn't anticipate on going too far, we were just kind of scooting around the property. We didn't have our helmets on. So, you know, disclaimer, you should always wear a helmet when you're riding an ATV. Just disclaimer, you know, I just want to put that out there. But we weren't. We were being a little bit dumb, I guess. So we're going down this trail and we come around a corner and there's a side-by-side thingy. I don't know what you call them besides a side-by-side, one of those little off-road things.
Yeah.
And so I go by it, and I just kind of waved. And I looked back to make sure Curtis got by okay, and he stopped. And I was like, why did he stop? So I turn around and go back. Well, that's two forest rangers. And
On your parents' property.
On the property. I should mention that Curtis and I, Pronature, the gun store that's sort of local in New Brunswick here had a really cool deal on some BB guns, handguns, CO2 powered handguns. So Curtis and I each bought one, and we had them on our belts, holstered, and we had been shooting, you know, pop cans and pine cones and stuff with the BB guns because why not? We're basically immature children, so we were doing that.
You're immature children.
Yes, no, not just children, and not just immature, but immature children. That's how low down we are here. I mean, we're playing with BB guns here. Come on. So when I go back and the guy steps out, I didn't realize right away, he steps out and I see he's got a gun on too. I'm like, oh, look at that. He's got it. Oh, and there's a shoulder patch. Oh, look at that. So first words out of my mouth were, because they were not, you know, concealed or anything. They were like just sitting on our hips. You know, we didn't have coats on or anything. Very first words out of my mouth, they're BB guns. They are BB guns. And he eyed me and eyed Curtis and looked at our belts. And one of the rangers went over to Curtis and he took it out of Curtis's holster and fired it into the ground. And okay, yeah, no, they're just BB guns. That's cool. So
that's how he tested to make sure it was a gun?
Yes, he pulled it out and fired it. So now
you
we do.
Safety on? I don't know. I'll pull the trigger. And
well,
see.
That's funny because he asked Curtis, "How do you take the safety off?" Because he pulled the trigger and nothing happened. So right. Curtis was like, "Oh, you got to press this button here," and he goes, "Okay, yeah, bang," and you know, shot the ground and looked at it like, "Yeah, they're just BB guns." So they're like, "Okay, cool, that's fine, guys. What are you doing with them?" We're like, "Oh, just shooting pine cones and pop cans, you know, just whatever, just kind of plinking and having fun." "Oh, okay, that's cool. So where's your helmets?" I'm like, "Well, what do you mean our helmets? They're back of the shed. We're on private property. We don't need our helmets." I didn't know that for sure, but I said it as if I knew it for sure.
Yes.
And the one guy, there were two guys, an older guy and a younger guy. And the younger guy's like, "No, I'm pretty sure you need your helmet on anytime you ride the ATV." So I'm like, "Oh, crap." He said, "Okay, so we're going to need some ID then from you boys. And I don't have my wallet. It's back at the house." Curtis, like, same thing. Mine's back at the house. I said, "You know what? You know, we just go down the trail here. We're at the parent or at my parents' house. We'll grab our IDs for you. So just, you know, you can follow us there." It's like, "Okay, yep, that's fine. You go ahead and do that." So I start up the four wheeler and I start down the trail, and I look back and Curtis has stopped. I'm like, "Okay, he's just waiting for the other guy." So I keep going. I get to the house and I'm just sitting there waiting. I went and grabbed the helmets because hoping that, look, we've got helmets. They won't give us a ticket or something. So anyway, I'm sitting there waiting. I'm waiting. And then I hear a bang, like a gunshot. I'm like, "Oh, that's odd." So
Curtis.
So I'm sitting there waiting. And a couple minutes later, Curtis finally comes down the trail and he's like, "I waved at you to come back." I'm like, "I didn't see you. I just turned and saw you stop. And I just kept going." He says, "Just as you left, a moose walked across a trail with a broken leg. Must have been hit with a car or something because his back leg was all just hanging and busted. And one of the rangers gets out, walks up to it." It couldn't go very fast. So he walks up to it. He shoots it right in the head with his 40 cal. Just walks up, bang, drops it right there. Like, "Oh man, I missed that. Dang it." And so anyway, Curtis was telling me the story about that. And then he said, "Oh, and by the way, they're not coming." Why not? He says, "Well, the older guy turned to the younger guy just after you left and said, yeah, if they're on private property, they don't need their helmets. So, you know, they couldn't give us a ticket for that or anything anyway." So anyway, Curtis and I put our helmets on anyway, and we drove back and checked out the moose. It was just a yearling, a 1-year-old, it looked like, and talked to the rangers for a while. Turns out they carry SIG P226s in 40 cal, okay. And they're double action, single action. They're not the double action only, so that was kind of neat. We talked about guns for a little while, and the one guy said, "Yeah, no, you know, sorry about that. I didn't realize you guys didn't need your helmets." I said, "Well, you know, it's a good reminder to have them on all the time anyway. So, I mean, it has much work as it is to put a helmet on. It just makes sense to wear one. So anyway, but yeah, no, they were really cool guys.
Say something. Yeah. I don't like wearing a helmet, you know, cause it messes up my cheek weld when I'm shooting while I'm riding."
No, I wasn't going to do anything in that regard. But it was interesting to note because I've heard other rangers tell me and other people who have spoken to rangers tell me that if a ranger ever sees you out in the woods with a handgun, he's going to immediately assume you're hunting, and he's going to tell you it's illegal because it's a handgun, and he's going to arrest you and take your handgun away, and it's going to be terrible. Well, these guys didn't even ask to see a hunting license. Curtis and I both had our hunting licenses anyway because it's pheromone season now. But they didn't even ask if we were hunting with them. They didn't say it was illegal, nothing. They're just like, "Oh, they're BB guns? Oh, okay, cool, have fun." Like, so to the naysayers who say that, you know, the rangers are out to get you whenever you got BB guns and pellet guns and stuff. Well, not these guys anyway. So it was kind of neat to see that and to have them not harass us about anything. So but anyway, yeah, it was a bit of excitement there. Fortunately, everything took place on property.
They just dropped the moose and left it.
They just dropped it and left it. Yep. They were still there. I'm like, I hadn't gone and looked at it yet. I'm like, so it was just over there? Yeah. I said, "Can we take the meat? I mean, it's a moose. Come on." He's like, "No, I'll go have a look. You're not going to want it." And I went over and it was really mangy and scrawny, and it probably wouldn't have been too tasty. So, but, he said, even if you did want it, you can't have it. There's no way in New Brunswick to get a permit for anything like that. You got to take it in hunting season or that's it. There's no other way to get the meat off the animal. They just won't let you.
Yep.
So, which is too bad really, because it's a waste. I mean, there are times when a moose goes down or a deer goes down, you know, for reasons other than hunting, and it's perfectly edible food and they just let it go to waste. But yeah, is what it is.
Yeah, I remember a story. I talked to a guy over in Moncton area, and he was from another province where it was allowed. If you hit a deer or hit a something, you could take the meat.
Mm-hmm.
And something happened. You see, it was right in front of his house. Some lady hit this buck, and it was during deer season, and he had a license.
Mm-hmm.
And so he talked to the ranger, and he's like, "So can I have this meat?" And the guy was like, "No, you're not allowed to have it." He said, "Well, I've got a license. Can I tag it?" And it was after dark. He was like, "Yeah, you could tag it, and then I'll charge you with harvesting a deer after dark or something like that. Some crazy thing like that."
Huh.
He was like, "Okay, never mind."
Chums. That's terrible. I think that's a waste. I think they should be allowed to. I think the problem with that might be, and I still don't think this is a good enough reason to have this reason to, or to have this be the reason, is that they think that people might intentionally go out of their way and hit deer and animals with their vehicles.
That's an expensive deer.
It really is.
You're going to go after it with your vehicle.
Well, you know, some of these guys is rednecks, and I'm saying nothing derogatory against rednecks. I love rednecks. I'm a redneck myself sometimes. But they'll go out and they'll put like big bush grills on their front, right? And then it won't hurt the vehicle whenever they take them down. So, you know, I could see people kind of abusing it that way. But still, I think those cases would be so few and far between that it would really negate the negative effects. I mean, there are just so many animals killed that could be eaten. And, you know, I'm all for eating animals. So I like to eat them.
Yep.
So, anyway, interesting side note too is there were actually two other dead moose on my parents' property, or currently still are, I guess. Looks like a pack of coyotes took down two of them, and they're right by the paintball field. And so we've got to hopefully we got bears too, so hopefully the bears will help clean them up. But if not, by the time summer gets here, they're going to be pretty rank. We're going to have to do something about them if we want people to come play paintball and not be throwing up in their paintball goggles. So
the smell of death was on the field that day.
Yeah, no kidding. So lots of moose in my life this week, apparently.
Wow.
How about you? What'd you get up to gun-wise?
Well, I guess wildlife-wise, I saw a bear and two cubs.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, I did see a bear from the airplane the other day.
Okay.
When we were flying, the instructor pointed it out. He looked down, and in the woods, there was a bear just standing there walking through the woods. So that was kind of neat to see that.
Yeah. That was kind of neat. It was the first bear I've seen this spring.
So where'd you see that?
Just down the road. I was up on my parents' property. It's a fairly high point, and I was up there, and I could look kind of down across the field that had been plowed, but you know, nothing had been planted, nothing growing, of course, yet.
Right.
And I saw, what was this, something on the edge of the woods, and then out come a mama cub and or a mama bear and two little bundles of fur.
Cool.
Behind her. So yeah, I mean, I couldn't really get a good idea how big she was or anything. It was a long ways away.
Right. Well, that's cool.
Bear
season should be starting up soonish.
Oh, it's been going for a month probably.
Oh, for a month now already. Okay. Cool.
The end of June. let me see. Well, I'm going to kind of do 2 weeks since wasn't on last week.
Yeah, I suppose that's allowed.
The Friday before.
You do so little. 2 weeks of yours is only 1 week of what Trevor does anyway, so.
If
well, you and me together, 2 weeks is 1 week of Trevor's.
Yeah. So the week before, not last Friday, the Friday before, I did go to the range and did some shooting with my pistol. Just hadn't shot since last fall. So I said, well, I got to get out and make sure I still got it. And I had someone actually that wanted some instruction, some basic instruction with a semi-auto. So they came down and we ran through some basic stuff, grip, stance, you know, shooting, doing some diagnosing. Fairly typical, but they did all right. And so I did I didn't do a whole lot, just some basic shooting, just to get used to shooting again.
Cool. That's always fun. Just get back into it.
Yeah, I just kind of ease back into it. I had good groups, but I didn't shoot from really long distances either. And then last Saturday, I went down, and apparently there was a cleanup day at the range, which I did not realize, but I landed there just as they were finishing, which was convenient. And I took my AR and pistol and just did a bunch of sort of more tactical work, transitions from rifle to pistol and shooting from different positions with the rifle. You know, I had my plate carrier on, had all my gear on, and shooting while moving was the other thing I practiced.
Yeah, that's something that that skill diminishes very quickly without practice, I find.
Yeah, so mostly was shooting from 20, 25 yards for those, both of those, for pistol and rifle.
Cool.
And kind of an interesting note, one of the president of the club was there. Well, a few guys were there that had been there all day, and they were at the back, and I was up shooting, and they were back in the building and just talking. But there's some windows on the building looking kind of down the range. And the targets I put up were IDPA targets.
Mm-hmm.
The cardboard target with the little box for the head, the B area, right?
Yep.
And so we have a rule at our range, no human silhouette targets.
Well, those, I don't know anybody with a square head.
Yeah. So anyway, he was kind of freaking out a little bit, thinking I was putting up human silhouette targets. So a couple of the other guys that were there were IPSC shooters, so they kind of had to explain, no, these are registered IDPA targets.
Yeah, these are legitimate targets. These aren't, yeah.
Anyway, so other than that, I did some dry fire today, and that was about it. Just practicing getting the gun in my hand and getting a good sight picture quickly and smoothly and everything. We've got a demo coming up next week.
Yes, we do, the 20th, right?
The 20th, so.
So what other information do you have on that? Because I sort of started explaining that last week, but then I didn't really have a whole lot of info, so.
Okay, well, I don't have a lot of info either.
Perfect. Well, between the two of us, we know nothing.
May 20th in Woodstock, the Woodstock Pistol and Rifle Club, there's going to be an IPSC demo. It's open for anybody to come and watch and people who have black badges to shoot. And we're going to do, I think five stages is what's planned of a match. And just to kind of promote the sport and get people interested in doing another black badge here in Woodstock. I think there's a few people interested now. So we're just trying to kind of promote it a bit to get some more numbers.
Cool.
So if anybody listening that's in the area wants to come,
or
to
even
that,
not in the area. I mean, if you want to drive across the country for this, you certainly can. Yep.
It will be the most memorable black badge you could ever take. That's for sure. If you were to, of course, this isn't the black badge anyway. This is just a demo, but
just a demo, yeah. But if you want to come
we have lots of fun at our matches. So
yeah,
it is
very much. They're very fun. It's not. I mean, nobody gets overly competitive. It's just very much, let's see how badly I can screw up the stage kind of thing is sort of the attitude most people have, which is, it's great. It's refreshing to see people enjoy the sport, but not take it so seriously. I mean, they take it seriously enough. Obviously, everything safety related is 100%, to the letter. But as for, the competitive side of it, people are serious enough. They do as best they can. But at the same time, it's not, everybody there sort of realizes, I'm not playing for money here. This is just for fun. Let's see how we can do. And they critique each other and laugh at each other and make fun of each other, but all sort of fun.
Yep. Yeah. None of it's mean. None of it's derogatory. It's all in good fun. And it's a pretty, pretty easygoing bunch of guys.
Yeah. It's really refreshing to shoot at your range that way. So, yep. What was that? Sorry.
I said, and gals.
So and gals. Yep.
I don't know if she's shooting. We do have a few, ladies that have their black badge, so we'll see. Maybe some of them will show.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
So I think that's it for that. Upcoming events.
That was one of them, so there we go.
That was one of them. We have a good list here. The 5th Annual Charity Shoot, June 27th. All proceeds going toward the Dalhousie Nursing Home Foundation. $25, it says here. So that's the entry fee. What is it?
Yep, that's the entry fee.
Entry fee, whatever.
You pay that to get in.
$25 to get in.
Yeah.
It's going to be a little IPSC style match, some general rifle shooting, some silhouette, some, what else? That's skeet. Trap. Skeet. Skeet. There's going to be some of them there skeets.
Trap.
clay pigeon things.
There you go.
Shoot them with the scatter gun. Yeah, there's going to be some trap shooting. So that's a bit about the same every year. It's kind of the same stuff we do.
We do the same format usually. It works. It works well. In the morning it's kind of very informal. Get to know each other, do some sort of informal competition, the 22 Plinkin and the trap, and then a nice informal sort of lunchtime rifle shoot. You eat your lunch and shoot your rifles and just go up and down the line and talk to people and say hi and stuff. And then the afternoon, sort of a mini match doing IPSC. So It's a lot of fun. And you don't need a black badge to shoot this IPSC match. It's a club level. You can come out, just, you know, have a safe handgun and have a holster is basically all you need. And, yeah, it's a lot of fun. You should come out and play for sure.
And next, we got the para course with Tommy Nelson on July the 3rd. That's the next weekend.
Yes, it is. Yeah, Tom's actually flying in the 28th, which is the day after the charity shoot.
Okay.
And then, the following weekend, he'll be there to do his course. So anybody at the charity shoot who wants to meet Tom and can stick around for a day, you know, just wait a day and Tom will be there.
Yep.
You can meet Tom Nelson of the Gun Dudes and para.
So his course is July 3rd, and then there's an IDPA. That's what Tom shoots. Is
right.
IDPA in the States. Mini match on the next day, July 4th, because America.
Because America, basically, yeah.
And is it confirmed there's one spot left?
Yes, there's one spot left in the para course with Tom. Okay. And so currently it is a horse race. Whoever gets to para-training.com and signs up and pays, you are on the list. You'll be there. So whoever gets there first wins. There's literally one spot available. So you want to take this course, go to para-training.com anyway and just go through, read the description of what the course is going to be. It's going to be a really cool course. I'm looking forward to it myself.
And then we have Carbine Vitals 2 Clinic. This is September 4th and 5th. There's 7 unpaid spots available in that. So
yeah, see, last week I said there were 4 spots, and that's true because we got 3 people on the list who just haven't paid yet. But basically, it's whoever gets their money in first.
Right. So the people who think they're on the list somewhere and haven't paid, you are not on a list anymore.
Unless you've confirmed with me that you've paid, and 7 of you have, and you know who you are. You guys are cool. You're paid in full. Daniel has the money. It's out of my hands now. Anybody else who wants to shoot this now with Daniel and the other instructor who's coming, you need to go to Thunderbird Tactical.
Yep. Call them up and... do we give out this phone number?
Yes, that's the business phone number. So
okay, so 1-316-613-2336.
And you can, if you want to hear that again, you can rewind this show because it's recorded and listen to it again.
6-6-3-2-3-1-6-6-1-3.
Oh, good one. Now you're messing everybody up.
That's in reverse.
Just call up Daniel or Thunderbird Tactical.
It'll sound right.
What's that?
When they rewind it, it'll sound right.
Right, perfect. Yeah, just ask for Daniel Shaw. He works there, obviously, and he'll take your money and sign you up for the course. So this is another really cool course. It's 2 days. It is $400 US, but you are getting 2 days of some intense shooting. There's going to be medical stuff, combat first aid, weapon retention. Transitioning from carbine to handgun, a lot of carbine shooting, you know, different distances, how to zero your gun. I mean, that'll be probably very quick because we all did that last year, but it is going to be an amazing course. You really want to sign up for this.
SummerSlam, August 8th and 9th. Registration is open for that. T-shirt orders. We need a couple more. We need 25 so we can place the order. We have 23 now. And then there's a note here that the green... If you order green, it's not an OD green. It's a forest green.
Yeah, it's not olive drab. I checked it out with the manufacturer, not the manufacturer, the retailer. It's sort of a forest. It's the same color green we had last year for last year's run. So if you like that green, great. If not, there is tan if you want something more drab as opposed to green. So we can't get OD. Huh?
Militaresque,
yeah. But we do have tan, so that's cool.
Right, great. Okay, let's go on to some news.
All right, then.
BC camper killed by black bear serves as a spring warning. It'll be a warning any time of the year, but... Daniel O'Connor was camping near Mackenzie in northern BC with his fiancée when the attack took place. BC Coroner's Service says O'Connor was sleeping by the fire while Wallace, I assume that's the fiancée, slept in their motorhome. On Sunday morning, Wallace... woke to find O'Connor missing. O'Connor's father told CBC there was a trail of blood leading away from the site and that Wallace drove in the couple's car to get help as the area had no cell service. The O'Connor's father rushed to the scene and managed to sight the bear standing over the victim's body before returning to his vehicle to wait for BC RCMP and conservation officers. The bear itself, a large male weighing an estimated 300 pounds, was later sighted and shot. The coroner's service says it was believed to be the bear responsible for the attack. RCMP and conservation officers attended and confirmed that the injuries Mr. O'Connor suffered were consistent with a black bear attack, the coroner's service says. Barb McClintock, a spokeswoman for the coroner's service, told CBC it was the time of year when bears are out and about and likely hungry. She said campers need to be watchful and properly dispose of food and garbage, although she did not say whether those played a factor in O'Connor's death.
Yeah, that's pretty tragic. A couple of things spring to mind immediately. First off, here's another confirmed fatality by wildlife. And people say that these events are so rare, it doesn't justify or warrant the permits that allow people to carry handguns for self-defense out in the woods. I beg to differ. I mean,
just think if it could save one life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny. That's what the gun grabbers always say. You know, think of the children. If it just saves one life, it's worth it. Well, let's turn that around for a second.
Yeah.
I mean, people, you know, this guy died. He was eaten, killed by a bear. Yep. Yes, he was in this certain circumstance. A handgun might not have saved his life, but then again, it might have. If he was sleeping with a handgun, I suppose technically he would have had to have it unloaded. But even if he had it within arm's reach, he may have had a chance. But that's sort of beside the point. It's spring. Bears get up and they're hungry this time of year. You got to watch out for them. I don't know
eat all winter, you'd be hungry too.
I would be. I don't know if I would sleep outside this time of year if I knew the bears were around. I guess I might, but I would probably be a bit more cautious, and I would probably, because I can legally do it, I would have a gun with me, but it would, be a 12 gauge, I would imagine, probably.
I don't think it matters really what it is. Bigger the better, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But even a .22, it makes enough of a crack that most bears, no matter how hungry they are probably going to stop.
Right.
Unless they're being provoked or it's a mother and cubs and you're in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Right.
Even the sound of a .22 is going to probably do the job. But
probably. I mean, I wouldn't bet my life on that, and I wouldn't say a .22 is adequate for bear defense.
Oh, no.
but yeah, you're right.
Being out, you got to have bird shot.
It's hilarious because that's the answer I got when I emailed the Minister of Natural Resources here in New Brunswick, because we're not allowed to carry anything other than bird shot, and we're not allowed to have anything bigger than .22 caliber whenever we're not hunting big game here in New Brunswick. If I'm hunting varmints, I can have, .22 250 is the largest rifle I can have. And I think BB is the largest shot I'm allowed to have in my shotgun. No buckshot, no slugs, unless I actually have a tag for a bear or a deer or a moose. And I emailed them and said, look, people get eaten by bears around here. Why, I think we should be allowed to carry a heavier caliber, or at least, buckshot or slugs in case we run into a bear for self-defense. And he emailed me back, and I still got the letter somewhere. I should post it. He says, don't worry about that. A blast of birdshot will deter any bear. I don't think so, buddy.
It's possible.
It's possible that it would do it, but I'm not going to bet my life on birdshot.
Well, that's the thing. By the time that birdshot's going to be effective, they're so close, you don't have second chances.
Yeah.
A birdshot would probably stop a bear, actually, at 3 feet.
I would much rather
that full run, that 10 feet is a flash.
Yeah. That's trigger.
If it doesn't work or you miss, that's it.
Yeah.
You better be good with a knife.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Just, I would say, be careful out there. If you're out camping this time of year, and especially in an area where there's bears, take some precautions.
It is an unfortunate situation, but.
Yeah. For sure. So, anyway, just be careful out there, folks. Don't let the bears eat you. We need all the listeners we can get. We don't need you getting eaten by bears, so be careful.
Yep.
So, when you are out in the woods, though, and you are camping, what would be a good way to keep the bears away if you didn't have a firearm there, Owen? I was going to say a campfire, but this guy had one, and that didn't really help, did it?
Yeah, it didn't really help, did it?
No.
I was going to comment, actually, on the size of this bear.
300 pound?
300 pounds, people go, oh, that's a big bear. But you know, it's not that big of a bear.
Well, it's about as big as Trevor, right? I'm just kidding, Trevor. I'm just kidding.
You know, I've shot several bears, and two of the bears I've shot have been over 250. So you know, one was 260, one was 280. So that's getting right up there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the bear I shot last year is pretty close to 300 pounds. I mean, these aren't 800-pound grizzlies we're talking about.
Right.
This is a 300-pound black bear. It doesn't look like a big bear. You know, when you see it, if you don't know what to compare it to, a person would go, well, it's not that big.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you know? I can see that.
So I just find it interesting, you know, to say that it was estimated at 300 pounds, which maybe is bigger than, you know, it's probably bigger than your average, but it's not a monster.
Well, think of it this way, though. Would you fight a 300-pound person?
Yes.
Well, okay. I'm not talking to you directly. I'm talking to the average person.
Oh, okay, right.
Right? A 300-pound person is not somebody you would just go up and you know, fight and get into a big hoopla with. And even if they were, that is something you do. Remember that bears, they work out every day.
Yeah.
That's their life, is walking around being very lean and muscular. You know, a 300-pound bear is not the same as a 300-pound person. 300-pound.
If anybody's seen a bear with no skin on, it's scary the amount of muscle they have on their arms, their forearms.
They have four arms?
Yes. Well, yeah, they walk on two of them. No, on their, you know, on their biceps and forearms, you know, they look very human-like in their upper, in their front, as a man would, a muscular man would in his upper body. But they're a pile of muscle.
Yes.
I tell you.
And they're strong. I mean, they kill and eat things to live, you know. If that's something you have to do, you're going to be strong. So, you know, a 300-pound bear, while maybe it's not huge in terms of, you know, oh, I hunted an 800-pound grizzly. Well, yes, that's obviously bigger. But I still think a 300-pound bear is not something to scoff at.
Yeah. No, no, absolutely.
So.
And I've been in fields, you know, cornfields and stuff surrounded by bears.
Like I talked about on the show. That's always freaky, eh?
Surrounded by two or three bears, but I had a gun, so I wasn't, you know, overly worried.
Right.
But to be out, I wouldn't want to be out in the woods, and I never go to the woods generally without a gun.
Yeah, well, I'm the same way. I mean, usually my gun is a .22 that I got with me, which isn't, like I said, the greatest defensive firearm, but at least it makes a noise, and hopefully I can scare off something if that were the case.
At least if you saw it coming, you could put 10 rounds in it pretty quick.
Sure. Well, and I can run quick. So as long as I'm out in the woods with Owen or Curtis or Trevor, you know, I don't have to be faster than the bear. I just have to be faster than my friend. Well, friend, quote unquote. Obviously, if I'm leaving them to be eaten by a bear, how much of a friend are they, really?
No, you're the one that's not the friend.
That's basically it, yeah. I should be nicer to my friends, I guess.
You'd probably have more of them.
Maybe not let them get eaten by bears. I don't know. Whatever. Well, that went off the rail sideways and whatnot. That was cool.
I'm sure
we insulted all kinds of people there. But yeah, no, we were...
We were going to talk about fires.
We were going to talk about fires. Yeah, just sort of as a side note. I guess sort of a prepper's corner.
We were
going to talk about pure honey.
We were?
No.
That's actually a really good idea.
I was trying to think of something that would be as boring as raw milk, and I figured pure honey would be the next thing up there. Although bees are never all that boring.
Did you know that raw honey is the only food that never goes bad? Ever?
I did know that, and now our listeners know that, and now half of our listeners are screaming at their computer, stop talking about food!
They actually got honey out of a tomb in Egypt.
And it was still good.
They opened it up and ate it.
Yeah.
And it was still good.
Yep.
Isn't that crazy?
It's crazy.
And if you have allergies, eating raw honey from the area that you live in that you have the allergies can either eliminate it or reduce the, you know, severity of it because of the pollen that's that's used to make the honey.
You hear that sound? That's thousands of listeners hanging up.
And starting versus more is less boring or more interesting?
I don't know.
So, well, we're kind of doing this backwards order because I haven't read the emails.
It's true. We haven't read the email yet, but it doesn't matter.
We do have a email later on that kind of deals with the prepper thing. The Warriors Ethos Project Corner, whatever it's called. We need to come up with a better name for that. And
well, that's your job, basically, because it's your corner.
Yes, that's true. So the compromise was to talk maybe more survival, woodscraft kind of stuff, as opposed to homesteading
style, right,
type of stuff. So we thought kind of in relation to the bear story, talking about different ways to start a fire.
So you got your Bic, you got your Zippo, you got your gasoline.
I would just wait for a lightning strike.
Lightning strikes? I mean, that's not, like, it's a surefire way, see what I did there, of getting a fire going. It's just not exactly on demand.
No. But what I usually do is I only go camping in areas where there is already a forest fire.
There you go.
You know, you can just run a couple miles over and get your fire. And
then, yeah, go back and Bob's your uncle and you've got your fire now.
Well, as the saying goes, you should always have three ways to get everything you need. I think I've mentioned that on the show before.
Yeah, I think you have. And I like that. That's a good philosophy.
Yeah. And so you're going camping, you get your little survival bag you take with you when you go hunting, and everyone should have that. You should have three ways to get everything you need. You should have three ways to build fire.
Yep.
And
all kidding aside, a lighter and matches should be two of those ways because they're almost foolproof.
That's right.
They may be super easy, but that's kind of the idea here.
Yeah. Don't go in your little, you know, fire making kit is stuff to make the most rudimentary or primitive methods of making fire.
Yeah, make it easy on yourself.
It makes it look easy, but it's not that easy. Yeah.
Now, that being said, learning some rudimentary caveman-style fire-making methods, that's not a bad idea.
Oh, it's an excellent idea.
Because
and don't just say, oh, I know how to do that. Learn it and practice it and do it before you get in a situation where you might need it.
Yep.
Because it's always a lot easier to do it in your backyard under controlled circumstances.
Yep.
And fail many times there when you can just go inside when you're done. Than to try and do it, you know, in the woods when you're cold and hungry and maybe it's raining.
And that's never, it's really hard to light a fire in the rain. It's not impossible, but it is really hard.
I've done it before, but it involved a tire and kerosene.
I lit a fire in the rain before, but I was in my house.
Right, yeah.
Lighting the wood stove. It was raining outside. I didn't say I was outside. Just said I lit it while it was raining.
So what are some other ways, Matt? Obviously, we got matches. We've got, you know, a lighter or something like that. What's another way that you would carry, you know, stuff with you?
Well, my favorite non-lighter, non-match way is ferrocerium, which people commonly call flint.
Mm-hmm.
So the sparkers, you can get them at Walmart. Sometimes they come attached to like a small block of magnesium. And so you use your knife to shave off some magnesium shavings and then flip it around. There's a sparker built into it, and you use your knife to create a shower of sparks. The magnesium lights on fire, and then you can burn almost anything with that. So that's one of my favorite ways, using one of those, because it's hard. I mean, even when they're wet, they work. Mm-hmm. You're not going to break it. Well, I guess you could technically break it, but it would still work. It's not like a lighter where if you broke the lighter, all the gas escapes. Not like matches where they get wet, they're ruined. Like it seems to be a pretty hardy way, and it's not easy. But once you figure out how to do it, mm-hmm. it's not really all that hard either. It does take a bit of technique, but it's a good way, and it really impresses the ladies when you light a fire with nothing but a knife and a stick of flint.
Yeah, so, yeah.
You're awesome. Yes, I am.
The knife that I usually carry when camping or hunting is a Moorcraft, and on the front of it, it has one of those rods right on the sheath.
Cool.
Built right in with it. Plus, I always carry a lighter anyway,
mm-hmm.
my pocket. But another way that I've seen done before, I've done it you know, once or twice, but never in a real survival situation. And there's downsides to it, but one way is using a battery, so a 9-volt battery.
Yep.
And a bundle of steel wool, very fine steel wool.
Yes, that works very well, too. And people are like, what do you mean steel wool? Steel doesn't burn. Actually, burns quite nicely.
If that fine, it burns very well.
Yep.
And that will work in the rain. The downside is that you've got to make sure your battery actually is charged.
Yes.
So it's one of those things, you got to just rotate it. You know, make sure you're rotating it through so you always have a good battery.
Well, the other thing to bear in mind is that you can just keep a bundle of steel wool in your pocket as the tinder. Don't keep your 9-volt in there too, obviously. Yeah. But you can use, if you don't want to use a battery, you can just use a lighter and you can just light steel wool on fire.
Yep, absolutely.
So you don't, you know, just because you don't have a 9-volt battery with you, you can't light steel wool. No, sure you can. It's just that if you don't have matches or a lighter, a 9-volt battery and steel wool, and it doesn't have to be a 9-volt. You know, I've seen people use car batteries.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
I think it was
plenty of juice there.
What's that?
Plenty of juice there.
Oh, yeah, you're right. So, yeah, use whatever you have at your disposal. Create a short circuit, and that the wire of the steel wool, if you will, short circuits, gets really, really hot and catches on fire. It's a great way to start a fire.
Yeah. Obviously, there's bow one. Forget what this.
Oh, yes. Those things
just left me. Yeah, they're hard. You don't actually have to have a fire with that. It just keeps you warm in the process of trying to get a fire.
Yes, it does.
And we've experimented with that before. And
yes, we have. And we basically got warm with, not by starting a fire. We got warm because it was very hard to do it. It was very rigorous work.
It's a lot of that is not necessarily the actual process. It's the wood you choose.
Yep.
It's what makes it. You need something that is hard, creates a lot of friction,
and is dry.
Very dry.
That's kind of key.
Yeah. But even dry wood that's not the right wood, I don't think will do it. I think you need stuff like cedar and things that will spark and catch very quickly.
Yeah, that's sort of how I understand it too. It needs to be the right wood, and it needs to be dry wood. Yep. That's a hard one. That's something that if you wanted to learn, I mean, that would be a great one to learn how to do, because all you need literally is like a shoestring.
Yep.
And if you have wood at your disposal and you can determine what the right stuff is, a shoelace. Everybody wears shoelaces out in the woods. All you need is a shoelace and you can start a fire. I mean, that would be an amazing skill to have.
If you don't have any wood available to do this, actually, if you don't have any wood available, you're probably no point trying to start a fire.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah, that's a good point.
And the other thing I thought that would be neat to talk about is moving. So let's say you have a fire, but you need to move your location for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
But you then don't want to turn around. Maybe you used a primitive way to get that fire going, and you don't want to have to do that all over again.
Yeah, because that was a lot of work.
That's right. Is now taking your fire with you. And there's a few techniques for that. One key is to... some people say, well, we just get a piece of wood on fire and carry that piece of wood with you. But one piece of wood tends not to burn very well. Fire kind of plays off of multiple sticks. So if you have two sticks that are both on fire and you keep them crossed, they will burn much better where those sticks cross and at that spot.
Yes. So yeah, they feed off each other.
Yeah, a bundle of sticks will keep itself going for a very long time.
So what do you do then?
What do you mean?
Well, so do you carry a bundle of sticks with you whenever you go to your next campsite?
Yeah, you would. Well, you would take some sticks from your fire and basically get them. They don't have to be open flame the whole time, but you can. The most primitive way is just carry two cross sticks.
Right. That's
the primitive way. Keeping something smoldering and not allowing the oxygen to get to it and just burn up is better, because you can carry it a lot farther that way before your materials are burnt up. So you can use moss or wrap it up very tightly in something in bark or, you know, something that'll limit the oxygen getting to it. So while it'll still smolder, there's still embers, you've got some, you know, that kind of charcoal-y type wood in there
mm-hmm.
that has heat, but you can't, but the oxygen isn't getting, the air isn't getting to it and causing a lot of open flame.
Right.
I mean, we've seen like Les Stroud on his shows and stuff. Well, I think one of his shows, he did some moss wrapped up really tight with, I don't know what he wrapped it up with, but.
I think he just took like strips of bark.
Yeah, and wrapped it up.
And wrapped it up and got it nice and tight. And you, you limit the amount of oxygen to it, but it smolders like a cigar or a cigarette.
Yep.
It just smolders and smolders. And whenever you get to where you're going, you just unwrap it and blow on it and put a bit of dry tinder in there and woof.
Yep. So that's always an option. That's more of a survival thing. Obviously, if you've got a whole package of matches and you only need one match to start your first fire, you know, you use that option rather than trying to go to the work of carrying it
right
with you. But there definitely are ways to do it.
Yep. Cool. So, well, what else? Or is that it?
That's all I can think of. I don't know if maybe the listeners have other techniques they've used or heard of or other ideas for starting fires that they carry when they hunt. I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be kind of cool to hear what other people do whenever they're out in the woods.
Yeah,
how do you guys light your fires? And if you write in and just say Zippo, then okay, cool.
Yeah, pick some. If you have something other than what we've mentioned.
Yeah. Or if you have a better technique of doing a way that we mentioned, that'd be fun to hear about too. We like learning from other people, so.
Yep.
Fantastic.
So, listener feedback. Why don't you take this first one?
Sure. This first one comes to us from Thomas. Hey guys, thanks for reading my email in the last episode about the nonsensical rambling. Didn't think you'd actually read it. We read everything, Thomas. Don't be silly. Now, let's get to a true gun question. I'm dead set on buying a CASM scope mount from M14.ca. The only problem is, which one should I go for? The Gen 2 or the Gen 2 EX? The EX being the extended rail. Thanks for any advice, Thomas. Thomas, more is better. Get the EX.
Longer is better, in your opinion?
I guess so. I mean, it's not like it's going to add that much extra weight, right?
No, and especially if you're putting on an M14.
Yeah,
you're probably not worried about that.
Weight isn't really an issue, I wouldn't think. So I would think the longer the real estate you have to mount scopes and scope rings and stuff, I would think that would be better because then you can really fine-tune exactly where you want your scope to be. And, it's more options is better than fewer options, I guess.
Yeah. I have this mount on my M305.
Hold it up to the microphone so all the listeners can hear it.
Oh, it's upstairs in the safe.
Oh, okay.
And I don't have the extended one, but I find it's plenty long for mounting anything, for anything I would need to mount.
You're saying to him, don't get the EX.
Oh, I say get whatever he wants. I don't
think
he
asked us.
Well, I don't think it matters. Unless you're going to mount some, you know, specialty scope that is really long, or you need an extra long, have some weird eye relief, you know, issue. I don't know. Does it matter for scopes for having a wider, if the rings are set wider apart, is it better? I don't know. I don't think it is. I've never heard that about scopes.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I
wonder if there is sort of any benefit to that.
Can't answer that one myself. So I think the regular one would probably mount almost any scope you could want. But if you want the extended rail, get the extended rail.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great mount, by the way. It's really well made. It goes together really easy, you know, to go on to the gun. So I really like mine.
That's cool. That's good to know. I didn't realize you had the same one that he was after.
I'd looked at the two. I looked at that one, and I looked at the ProMag. The ProMag mounts on the side has a bolt, and it's a tapping right in the receiver for it. But two reasons. I'm trying to remember why I didn't get it. I think I didn't get it because it was a little more expensive than this one, actually. So that's why I ended up with this one. This one is Canadian made.
That is a nice bonus.
Yeah.
Being Canadian made, I like Canadian made stuff.
The downside, this one mounts, you have to disassemble the rear sight. And this one actually bolts right into the rear sight.
Now, these ones actually come with a sight built into them, though, do they not?
Well, they sort of do. I don't know how practical it is. There is a little peephole in the back of the rail.
Right.
That you could technically use as a rear peep sight. I can't. Well, I don't, simply because of the stock that I put on it. I put the ProMag Archangel stock on it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, it's the ProMag stock, and it has the, because my scope is set so high, the cheek rest is so high that I can't get my face down. I'd actually have to adjust my stock down the cheek.
Right. Which is normal whenever you're running open sights and scopes. You don't get the best of both worlds there. You
have to
compromise one or the other. So,
yeah. So, but if you had the regular stock on it, I guess it might be possible with that. But again, if you're putting this mount on it, you're doing it because you're going to put a scope.
Yeah. If you're putting a scope on, you don't really need to worry about the open sights.
So, no, it's, I like it. Like I say, it mounts all in the rear sight, so you do have to disassemble that rear sight. But seems to work. Seems to be nice and sturdy. I haven't had any issues with that.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yep.
Cool. All right. Well, Thomas, good luck. Let us know which one you get.
Yep. Pictures.
Yeah, pictures are always cool.
The next one comes from Daryl. Dear Slamfire, I really enjoyed Trevor's SKS rant, even though I am one of those people who has put a plastic stock on an SKS. Having adjustable length of pole was worth a few bucks. If anybody is seriously complaining about amusing rants, tell them to go out and buy a sense of humor right after they pull their SKS bayonet out of their butt.
Huh.
Long-time listener to the show, first-time emailer, Daryl.
Thank you, Daryl.
I missed Trevor's SKS rant. Was that
yes, last? That was a heck of a rant.
Okay, that was last week. Eh?
Yes, it was.
I will go back and try to listen to.
Yeah, you got to listen to that.
I've been waiting for my grass to grow because usually I listen to podcasts while I'm mowing my lawn.
Right.
The grass isn't long enough yet, so I'm missing out on all these podcasts because
the grass hasn't grown. So basically, you're blaming it on the grass.
I'm blaming it on the grass. Yeah.
All right. You got to blame it on something, I guess.
All right. Do you want to grab this one, and I'll grab the last one.
Sure. From Luke. Just dropping a note to say how much I like Owen. There, I'm just going to leave it like that. How much I like Owen. Thank you, Luke.
I like you too.
How much I like Owen's Prepper's Corner. I'd love to hear more of it. A suggestion for a compromise, as it is on a gun show, would be to have it discuss firearms and other weapons as they relate to prepping. Also, as opposed to subjects like gardening and raw milk, which have more to do with homesteading and long-term survival, maybe bushcraft and short-term survival.
Hey, food and drink is important to long-term survival.
Yeah, that's true.
If you don't eat and drink, you will die eventually.
Yep. So he was saying, and things that would be useful to outdoorsmen like hunters, that might be of a greater interest to the listeners. Just my 2 cents. Thanks from Luke. And so Luke, yes, it was your email that actually prompted Owen to think, hey, what about fire? Let's talk about fire. And so we did. Maybe, we talked about fire.
Maybe next week then we'll talk more about firearms related to prepping, or we've kind of done that before on the show, I guess.
Have we?
Well, we did. Yeah. We can only pick one gun. But
I think
we talked about survival rifles, maybe. I don't know if we did or not.
Yeah, you could speak maybe on specific firearms that you think somebody who is prepping may want to have.
Yes.
That might not be a bad idea.
I will do that. We'll do that next week.
Cool.
And then Trevor can tell me how wrong I am.
Right. Well, I mean, this is probably going to be one of those ones where... you know, for as many listeners as we have is how many opinions we'll have.
Yeah, that's true. It'll be more general than that. My mm-hmm. opinion more general than that. But
you can right. definitely talk about some of the ones that you think are good and, you know, go off that.
This is from John. I was just wondering why you think the SKS is a turd. For a 60-year-old gun, it works very well. I've put over 3,000 rounds through mine and had maybe 2 or 3 malfunctions. There are things I don't like about it, like the safety, how heavy it is, and where the mag release is located. But other than that, I can hit my target at 200 yards over and over. Cheap ammo, cheap gun. Don't think it gets any better than that for plinking. I wouldn't take the gun to a competition, but it definitely is a good starter for someone who just got their pal.
Well, I don't...
That's a good point.
That's very good point. And I don't know if Trevor said he didn't like the SKS. I think what Trevor doesn't like and what his rant was about was people who take the SKS and then try to turn it into something it isn't, putting the plastic Tapco stocks and pistol grips and posing like a poser, basically. I think is what he was sort of aiming. I don't think he has anything against the SKS itself, although I'd have to go back and listen to it again to see, because maybe he does just hate the SKS in its entirety, which is completely possible knowing Trevor. I mean, he hates 1911s because they have low capacity and they shoot outdated ammo, but he goes and buys a 44 Magnum six-shot revolver. You know, I don't know. So he's got to
blow your head clean off. I mean,
well, it's the most powerful handgun in the world.
Yeah, my only beef with the SKS is the factory box, internal box magazine.
That's
really the only upgrade I like is to make it so that it will take a removable, you know, those removable Tapco mags.
My biggest beef with it, well, I got two actually, and actually three. The third one's one Owen just mentioned, but they got a really short length of pull. The stocks are really, really short, which is why I think most people put plastic stocks on them, aftermarket stocks, because
you put that
unless you're a 12-year-old girl, you can't really shoot that thing comfortably.
Yeah, your thumb is like sticking up your nose trying to...
Oh, it's I've shot yours a few times, and it's just, it's unwieldy. It's just, it's uncomfortable to shoot. I mean, the sights actually aren't that bad on it. They're not great by any stretch. Mm-hmm. They're accurate enough. I mean, for an open-sighted, you know, 18.5-inch barreled 7.62x39 rifle, I mean, it's accurate enough, I think.
Semi,
yeah. I think it's a great little gun. If we didn't have the really dumb caliber restrictions that we have here in New Brunswick, I'm sure I'd have a couple of them anyway, because it'd be a great four-wheeling gun and hiking gun and just something to go out and plink with. You're right. The ammo is inexpensive. The gun itself is inexpensive. You don't care about scratching it up and beating it up because you break it, buy a new one, you know? So yeah, I don't think we think it's a turd, although Trevor might think it's a turd. We'll have to ask him next week. I'm sure he has an opinion on this for sure. But yeah, no, you got a really good point. It's a great good starter for someone who just got their pal, who wants a semi-auto, a cheap semi-auto, who just wants to go to the range and shoot and just have some fun, cheap ammo. Absolutely, get an SKS for sure. Maybe get a plastic stock for it though.
Yeah. Well, and that, I mean, as we know, guns that fit, people shoot better with guns that fit.
Yes.
And if the gun doesn't fit, I mean, they're not going to have as much fun.
No, you're absolutely right. Especially if you punch yourself in the face every time you shoot,
well,
because
exactly.
Your fist is right there in front of your nose. Yeah.
Four.
Yep.
So if you would like to email the show, feel free to do so. slamfireradio@gmail.com. So that is the email. Send us email. We like to read your email. We like to respond to your email. This is how we know that we're not just talking into a microphone and throwing the data out onto the interwebs and wondering if anybody listens.
Right.
So we like
people definitely listen. I just went and checked our iTunes reviews. We got three new ones.
Woohoo!
Yep.
Hit it.
All right. First one comes to us. It's titled Fantabulous Show, and it's from Ten Gunner. He says, given the fact that these guys are a bunch of Tupperware ipsical shooters. I've never heard that before. Ipsical. I love it. Ipsical,
like,
Tupperware
is
shooters.
Like a popsicle?
Yeah, but an ipsical. Is that, do you shoot ipsic in the winter? Yes, we call it our ipsical matches.
That's excellent. I love it.
So given these guys are a bunch of Tupperware ipsical shooters and have had no clue what an SMK was, they're funny and entertaining. What's an SMK again?
No idea.
Oh, crap. I don't know what an SMK is. Huh. I think somebody told us. It sounds familiar. I don't know. I can't remember. Anyway, Matt needs to eat more supper. Owen needs to quit interrupting Trevor. And Trevor needs to shoot a service rifle match with an AR decked out in full wood. All right. I guess it's supper time?
Apparently.
And Owen, apparently you interrupt Trevor a lot. I think that's me usually, actually, but whatever. That's cool.
I try to interrupt Trevor because I have people that tell me that he talks too much. And then you guys tell me I don't talk enough.
That's
so
right.
If he's talking all the time and I'm not talking at all, it would make sense that I would have to interrupt him if I wanted to talk.
Holy cow. I just clicked. So this next one, it was like four lines long, and then there was a click here for more. So right. I clicked it, and now it's about 30 lines long.
So it's like another email.
It's an email. So we're going to toss this into the email section. So this
so
one's from...
to rewind?
No, we're not going to rewind. I don't edit. You know that. So oh, I have not
just
read...
rewind it. Just a second. I'll rewind it right now. Okay, and the last email...
comes to us from Willie Darren. And it's titled, Great Show and Look at That Freedom of Speech. Thanks, Trevor. All right, now, this is me, Matthew, speaking here before I start reading this. I have not yet read this. So you listeners and Owen and I all get to hear this for the very first time. So I hope it's completely appropriate. And I hope that the spelling and punctuation is good. Not because I'll criticize it, because it'll make me sound like an idiot if I can't read it right. All right, so here we go, Willie. Willie Darren. This is what he writes. Greetings, and I apologize now for any grammar errors. It's hilarious. I'm a motorcycle mechanic, not a linguist. Well, first, I have to thank you all for the time and effort you have put into the show over these years, and I truly enjoy them, up until the end of episode 106. I actually was kind of disappointed with it for a couple of days without being able to explain why, and I wasn't sure what I thought of episode 106, hence the delay in this post, but note the 5 stars now. I say was because after chewing over the episode, everyone has opinions and are entitled to them, including you, Trevor. Trevor hates SKSs, and many of us out here love them, and this is Canada, and we're allowed to have our opinions in this beautiful country about our differences from our sports teams. Go Riders Grey Cup 2015. Yeah, I doubt it. views of faith, politics, motorcycle brands, or even firearms. I won't change Trevor's minds, but for the other aficionados of SKSs, perhaps I can make a case for us. In the same way, I can't understand why people spend so much money on some brands of motorcycles that sound and look like a tractor and corner like one. That is their choice, I guess. Firearms for many of us are similar, and I guess I like the tractor parts of the firearm world. I thought about it over the week, and I realized that most of you hosts have owned more firearms and are involved in more disciplines of training and competition than many of us regular folk could imagine. Regular folk, come on. So I wish to bring another perspective of the firearm culture. A long time passed, over 30 years ago, I slung an FN A1C2 on my shoulder while a militiaman in the RCA, Royal Canadian Artillery, it was our military battle rifle, and it had wood parts, by the way, and I'd sell my bike if I was allowed to buy a semi-auto C1 variant. Sorry, I digress. Back in the 80s, with my limited income, I took my Mini 14 and put some lipstick on it. Choke stock, bipod, flash eliminator, brass catcher, and yes, we had 30-round mags and were allowed to fill them to the brim. All right, I'm jealous already. Smith & Wesson Model 28, 357, and Packmeyer grips, etc., and then along came having a family, the 90s, and, sorry to say, I was firearmsless for over 20 years. Now I'm back with a vengeance, a member of both CSSA and NFA, even though I hate watching NFA mom and dad fight. I volunteer at my local gun club, which is ktsa.ca, as an RO, and assist with our junior entry shooter shooting program. I'm not the greatest shooter, and I have a limited shooting budget, but make do and show up for range day. I don't have anything to offer other than enthusiasm for shooting, but with that, I have engaged both non-shooters and shooters and FUDs in the discussion of several different firearms types, and have taken many to the range and invested time and ammo with them to give them an experience from 22 rifle, handgun, up to centerfire handguns, shotguns, and finish with centerfire rifle, most of which are now in polymer, like my everyday impact tools used as a mechanic. I enjoy taking my SKS with its Tapco pistol grip adjustable polymer stock. I love pistol grips since the FNC2 I carried, and I tend to convert everything I can over to more adjustability and more ergonomics if a decent alternative is available. I love taking inexperienced or zero experienced shooters to the range and help them ring the steel gong at 300 meters with open sights, and I've done this with crates of surplus ammo, and many newbies have put thousands of rounds through my favorite SKS. Many times, people at the range come over to our firing position to see what is hitting steel with open sights repetitively at a distant range, and it only makes me chuckle, and my new shooter guest feel rewarded and for minimal expense to me as far as I'm concerned. I've given someone their first range experience for pennies. I've got friends that are quote-unquote FUDs that only shoot high-end bolts and despise SKSs because everyone told them the semi-autos were junk. So after a meet at the range and allow them to try one in its original stock and another one with the lipstick pigskin in polymer stock, I'd give a snappy field strip demonstration. Now, each one of them own one and have chosen to change out their stocks to something more ergonomic than what they came with. Remember, they were designed to be slapped out there against the Nazis and held by a soldier wearing a puffy winter parka. Supposedly, a few made it into the service at the tail end of World War II. So, I understand that many people don't understand why we do work on our SKSs, but for those of us with very limited money, we can take a 70-year-old rifle that is very reliable, get affordable ammo, respectable accuracy for its design, can be field stripped in seconds for cleaning, and actually has a bit of history. And if I choose, I'm even allowed to haul it around as a truck gun. Take care, Willie Darren. As iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens a friend.
He makes a really good point.
Yep.
The point that it is also a really great gun to take people to the range with, because it doesn't cost you a lot of money to let them shoot as much as they want, and they don't know any better, because if they're new to it, it's just a gun, and they don't know any, you know.
Yep.
It wouldn't be like you and me picking up and going, oh, well, it doesn't really fit, and, you know, it's not really my thing. They don't know. They just want to shoot a gun.
Yep. Yeah, and if they drop it and scratch it, you don't care because it's an SKS.
Straight.
And you can use it to, like, poke the fire. And if you need more wood for the fire, you can burn the stock because you're putting a plastic one on it anyway. Yeah, no, I kid. But seriously, no, really good points on the SKS there. It is inexpensive, and it's a great way to get people shooting. Yep. And like you said, if the ergonomics don't fit you, you know, $100 stock, and now you've got a six-position stock that will fit almost anybody, and a pistol grip.
All right, so let's fast forward again to the last iTunes review.
Sure. All right, the last iTunes review here from the Hunting Gear Guy. Oh, I know him. The show that has it all. No, it says one show that has it all. If you can think about it, this show has it. From Glocks to gardening, M14s to milk, and archery to AR-15s. They have an opinion on it. In all honesty, though, this show is a fantastic resource for Canadian gunnies, and the hosts are great at motivating listeners to get more involved in their sport. Listening to this podcast sure makes the drive to work fly by. So thank you. That was a good one. That was a lot shorter than the last one. I like the alliteration there at the beginning. Glocks to gardening, M14s to milk. Yeah. We should talk about milk more often. I'm kidding. So, anyway, yes, those are our iTunes reviews for this week.
Great.
We want to thank everybody for sending them in. We love getting iTunes reviews. And even iTunes novels, as we just read about SKSs there. No, it was really good. And I think Trevor may actually, no, he probably won't. I was going to say Trevor may actually apologize next week and say, okay, you got a point. But no, he probably have another reason to hate SKSs even more.
Any shout outs?
To the two rangers that stopped me for not wearing a helmet and then for shooting a moose on my property with their handgun. To those guys. Hey guys, I hope you're listening.
I have a shout out this week.
Okay.
Hopefully he doesn't mind me saying his name.
I hope so too, because it's too late now.
Yep. Dave Malarenko is a listener to the show. I've talked to him before on a couple of occasions. Anyway, he sent me a Facebook message the other day. He said, you have a 308. Do you want some, a new reload for it? Do you want some brass for that? So he had, he told me the weight and I calculated out the number, but it's well over 200 pieces of brass, rifle brass that he sent me.
Wow.
In trade for a couple things, but still, that was, I think I got the better end of the deal, actually. So I've got enough brass now between what I have and what he sent me to do me for a very long time.
Cool. That's very good.
if more people want to send me brass, I'm more than happy to take it.
Of course.
So I think that's it. So check out the Crusader Podcast Network at crusaderpodcast.com. Join any or all of our National Firearms Associations. Important to support them. They do a lot for us. Check out us on Gun Owners of Canada forum. And not just us, check out everything over on Gun Owners of Canada. And like us on Facebook. We are at 1189. Yeah, almost at 1200.
Almost not at quite. 1200 likes.
Have we been passed yet? I have a feeling we passed.
Oh, probably. Us. We should probably just stop comparing and just whatever. Nah, Trevor's too competitive. We're going to keep comparing.
All right. So that is the end of the show. I hope everybody enjoyed it. And we will be back next week. Lord willing and the crick don't rise.
And we have a really exciting topic for you guys next week.
Okay.
We don't know what it is yet, but...
Okay, yes. Hopefully it's more exciting than this week's.
We'll figure something out. So anyway, yeah, like Owen said, thanks for listening, guys. I was going to assume you would then finish my sentence by saying, we'll see you next week.
Oh, okay. We'll see you next week.
Because you and I, we finish each other's...
Sandwiches.
Yes.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something.
When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.
That's terrible. You have to cut that.
Never. I cut nothing on this show.
I can't help it. I live with 4 women. 3 of them are little girls. I can't help it. Matthew doesn't even know what that's a quote from, probably.
Not a clue.
That's a Frozen. That's from the movie Frozen.
Oh, all right. I did not know that.
I have 3 little girls that are infatuated with Frozen, so... I've seen it a couple times, unfortunately.
Is that where the we finish each other's sandwiches comes from?
Yes.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know that.
And probably most of the people listening didn't know that or didn't get it and probably did not care. So I think I should shut up now because...
Oh, I stopped recording a while ago.
Oh, okay. Movie this afternoon called Falcon.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty new, 2014.
Any good?
Not really.
What's it about?
It's an action movie. It's just, well, it's this guy, his wife or his sister gets beat up in Rio de Janeiro, almost killed, and he's like an ex-soldier, I guess, by the flashbacks that he has. And so he goes down there and gets involved in the investigation and ends up, it's the Yakuts who are involved, and so he ends up...
The what now?
The Yakuts.
Bless you. No, what, who?
The Japanese gangsters.
Okay.
Apparently have... control the city or whatever. So anyway, so he's a martial arts expert, so he's in a big anyway,
but, of course he is,
but he was good with guns too because he was shooting everything all up, but the gunplay was pretty hilarious. He was a pretty good shot. Guys pop out and he just boom, one shot, they go down, never get up.
That's,
again,
that's, you know, if you're a good guy, that's what happens. But if you get shot as a good guy, it's never lethal.
No,
but if you shoot somebody, it's always lethal first shot.
I mean, it was a cool movie. I mean, it had some interesting plot twists and stuff that you didn't pick up right at the beginning, but some of it was obviously pretty poorly done too. And you know, there was a couple scenes where it was kind of dark, so you couldn't tell 100% for sure. But it looked to me like in one scene he's carrying a Glock, or he has a Glock that he just took from somebody.
Uh huh.
The next scene he has a Beretta.
Yeah.
So like, I couldn't tell for 100% for sure that.
But that's what it looked like?
That's kind of what it looked like at first glance.
I hate when they do that. I mean, how hard is it to be the props guy and just give the guy the same gun between shots? Hey, what gun did you have? The black one. Okay, here you go.
Yeah. Here's the other thing I don't get. Well, I mean, maybe this is just a quality thing. Don't you think if you're a bad guy, a boss, you're the boss, right, of the bad guys? You're probably buying guns from an arms dealer somewhere, right?
I would think so.
Don't you think you'd get kind of like a discount, like a deal to buy them in bulk? So all your guys would have the same gun.
Right.
Why does this guy have a 1911, the next guy has a Glock, the next guy has a different Glock, and this guy has a Beretta, and this guy has a revolver? Like, They got the money to hire these guys, but they don't have the money to buy them all, you know, matching equipment.
That's a good point. I don't know why they do that.
Why is this not in the show?
I just wrote down the time so I can put it in as an outtake.